Well, good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming and being on time. There will be some others coming in, I'm sure, but it would be nice if everyone could hear these announcements. I'm very pleased to tell you that our Holy Mother's Helping Hands food and clothing drive is going quite well. We're receiving clothing now, and the boxes are filling up with food. Next week, we will replace those partly full boxes with empty ones. The food will go to the Atlanta Community Food Bank and be distributed before Thanksgiving. Blessings on those people who do that work. The food drive and clothing drive, as you may recall, goes on through the end of December. So please do keep bringing things as it pleases you and as is practical for you. Both food, and if you want to know what to bring, there are flyers next to the box there out in the foyer that tells you what is needed. As far as the clothing goes, any warm clothing. Someone asked, can we bring pants? Yes, of course, pants are fine. Anything that will help those who are less fortunate and those who are homeless get through what promises to be a cold winter. That's what the almanac says, anyway. So, as we do each year, we'll celebrate Thanksgiving Day on Thursday, November 22nd. From 1:30 to 3:30 p.m., or however long people want to stay, really. Our potluck feast will be in the monastery's fellowship hall. Your center will offer the day's traditional dishes. Please bring other food, desserts, and beverages to share. If you want more details, they'll be on the website, on the Facebook page, and in each issue of the November e-news. So, or you can always ask me if you're thinking about bringing something in particular. Please let me know. I'm very pleased to announce that the dates have been set for Swami Atmarupanandaji, who will visit us from Friday, November the 23rd, to Sunday, November 25th. For those of you who don't know Swami Atmarupananda, and most of you wouldn't have had the opportunity. He's a very senior monk, an American Swami in the order, very fluent in Bengali and in Sanskrit. Sanskrit isn't these days a spoken language, but in the written language, he's translated a great deal and reads and can speak it, actually. He's served in many places. He served as the resident minister in San Diego. From there, he went to the Vivekananda Retreat Ridgely, where he was the resident minister there for 7 years. Then he went through a rough period of his health and ended up returning to California and being at the Trabuco Monastery. From there, he went to India to work on the new edition of Swami Vivekananda's Complete Works. And from there, he was transferred. When there became an emergency need for a posting, he was sent to Houston, Texas, the Houston, Texas Official Center there. And I can say Swami Atmarupananda is a very old and dear friend. I'm so looking forward to his visit. He will do a Saturday retreat. The Saturday morning session will be on basic principles of karma yoga. In the afternoon, streams of practice in karma yoga. On Sunday morning, and I really suggest that you not miss this talk, on Sunday morning he will speak on Prabuddha America, Awakened America. It's a remarkable talk that I heard him give some years ago, and it's only been improved since, but I heard him give it in Hollywood some years back. On Sunday, we'll follow the talk by a potluck lunch and reception for the Swami, after which he will return to his sister's house, who lives over in northwest Atlanta. his mother lived here for many years. I'm also delighted to tell you that the guru for some of you and the guru to be for some of you, Swami Sarvadevanandaji, will be with us from Thursday to December 20th to Saturday the 22nd. Thursday, December 20th, if you're marking this down, to Saturday the 22nd. There will be a program on both Thursday and Friday evenings here in the chapel after Arati, and a special talk. He hasn't given me the title of any of these talks yet. They'll be announced as soon as they're known. So a talk on Thursday and Friday evenings here in the chapel after Arati, and then a special talk on Saturday morning. He characterized it himself as a special talk on Saturday morning at 11 a.m. here in the chapel. On Friday evening, after the Swami's talk, we'll have a potluck supper and reception for him. As you know, when the Swami comes here, there is the opportunity for initiation, mantra diksha. If you would like to take initiation from the Swami, please let me know by email right away. There are things to be done in preparation for that. Initiations may be done on both the morning of Friday the 21st or Saturday the 22nd, according to the convenience of your schedule. So are there any other announcements that you'd like me to make that I didn't think to make? Okay, we'll begin with our beautiful opening chant. This is a translation by Swami Yogeshananda, the Swami who founded this center, bless him. He's now 95 years old, worked here for many, many, many years. Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahano Bhunaktu, Saha Viryam Karavavahai, Tejasvina Vaditamastu, Ma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. May the Divine Being look over us lovingly as a mother and father. May the Divine Being support and nourish us as a mother and father. May we have the strength and skill to study together the art of spirituality. May no misunderstandings arise amongst us. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto us and to all beings everywhere. Because it is the season for worship of the mother, I'll offer you this bhajan. Ma 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 bole. Ma ma. Join in if you'd like, as you catch on. Ma 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 ma. Ma bole, ma 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 ma, ma bole, dakshina kali kali bole ma, dakshina kali kali bole ma, ma 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 ma, ma bole. Ma 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 bole, Shri Devi Durga Durga bole ma, Shri Devi Durga Durga bole ma, ma 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 bole. Dakshina Kali Kali Bole Ma, Shri Devi Durga Durga Bole Ma, Ma 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 Bole, Ma 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 Bole, Sharada Devi Devi Bole Ma, Sharada Devi, Devi Bole Ma, Ma 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 Bole, Dakshina Kali, Kali Bole Ma, Shri Devi Durga, Durga Bole Ma, Sharada Devi, Devi Bole Ma, Ma 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 Bole, Ma 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 Bole, Sweet Mother Mary, Mary Bole Ma, Sweet Mother Mary, Mary Bole Ma, Ma 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 Bole, Dakshina Kali, Kali Bole Ma, Dakshina Kali, Kali Bole Ma, Dakshina Kali, Kali Bole Ma, Ma 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 Bole, Shri Devi Durga, Durga Bole Ma, Sharada Devi, Devi Bole Ma, Sweet Mother Mary, Mary Bole Ma, Ma 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 Bole. Om Harium Tat Sat. Again, welcome to you all. Please forgive the blinds being drawn. It helps me see you when there's a bright light coming through the windows. I can't see you as well. You're just kind of backlit in shadows. So thank you all for coming this morning. Our topic is fall festivals and the goddess Kali. Wednesday is Halloween, a contraction of All Hallows' Eve, Halloween, All Hallows' Eve. In Old English, Hallow meant saint and indicates the Roman Catholic Church had incorporated an ancient Northern European tradition, Samhain, into its calendar of ritual observances. Samhain, summer's end. In the early 8th century, Pope Gregory III designated the 1st of November as All Saints' Day, honoring saints and martyrs. He also decreed October 31st as All Hallows' Eve, a nighttime vigil of prayer and veneration. This Samhain, summer's end, it represents the end of the light half of the year. Samhain, as I said, means summer's end. You can hear summer, Samhain, summer's end. And so it signifies the end of the light half of the year and the beginning of the fearsome dark half with its needs for ritualistic protection. This morning, we'll take a journey through the ages, visiting fall festivals that celebrate the dead and explore some mythology and artistic expressions that can be traced back to the goddess Kali. We'll talk about Samhain, All Souls' Day, All Saints' Day, Halloween, All Hallows' Eve, Dia de los Muertos, Diwali, and the Festival of the Lanterns, and identify how some of these annual celebrations have ancient astronomical connections to Kali Ma. Ancient astronomical connections to Kali Ma. All Souls' Day is primarily a Roman Catholic feast day, when people remember loved ones who have passed away. In Mexico, this widely and elaborately celebrated, as the Day of the Dead, Dia de los Muertos. In the United Kingdom and the U.S., we have Halloween, with its roots in the ancient Celtic festival. On that particular night, in Celtic times, people lit bonfires to symbolically ward off the lengthening darkness and wore costumes to disguise themselves from roaming ghosts and goblins. As we'll see, there's more to this bonfires and to the costumes. Samhain, which became Halloween. Why is there a tie between scary creatures and Halloween? Most fall festivals have histories that are not that demonic. Yet Halloween imagery includes themes of death, evil, the occult, and mythical monsters. Black and orange are the holiday's traditional colors because they are associated with light and with fire. Can you already hear a whisper of Kali's terrible form and the colors associated with her? Samhain, later to be called Halloween, seems to have originated at least 2,000 years ago in the Celtic cultures of Northern Europe. Druids, the priests of these cultures, celebrated their new year on November 1st, the end of summer and the harvest season, and the beginning of a cold, dark winter, which they naturally associated with death. According to legend, Druids believed that the night before November 1st, October 31st, wicked souls or spirits, which had been condemned to live in the bodies of animals during the past year, were free to roam about. That in the darkness they were surrounded by spirits, ghosts, witches, fairies, and elves, some of whom could harm them. Cats especially were thought to be people who, as a punishment for evil deeds, had been reincarnated in that form. Those of you who live with cats can believe this sometimes. They can get up to quite some mischief. And of course, that's why witches, ghosts, and cats are part of Halloween today. So on the night of October 31st, Druid priests offered sacrifices to the gods. Their summer's end festival included huge bonfires. Bonfire means a fire in which bones are burned. Animals and the harvest plenty were burned to propitiate otherworldly spirits, asking for those demigods' protection during the bitter cold winter to come. And let's remember that there were the people who were to become Europeans in the European continent at the end of the last big ice age, which ended about 11,700 years ago, according to records. And they were also there, very much so, during the Little Ice Age, which began in the 1300s. So they had this, there was this warming period between the end of the glacial periods and the Little Ice Age. But it was still very cold in Northern Europe during those times. So when they talked about 6 months of dreadful darkness and cold in those far northern latitudes, it really is that way. And as the night of Samhain fell, people dressed in symbolic costumes, a form of magic meant to avoid being recognized by roaming spirits in hopes that they would be mistaken for them and for fellow spirits, and so the fellow spirits would leave them alone. I'll read that again. A form of magic meant to avoid being recognized by roaming spirits in the hope they would mistake them for fellow spirits and leave them alone. So this business of being dressed up in costumes on Halloween is really a form of sympathetic magic. It is to avoid being recognized by malefic spirits. Trick-or-treating, dressing up in costumes and begging door-to-door for treats, is now, of course, customary for children on Halloween. It dates back to the Middle Ages and a tradition called souling, S-O-U-L-I-N-G, souling. Poor folk would go door-to-door on Hallowmas, All Saints' Day, November 1st. Families would give them pastries called soul cakes in return for their promise to pray for the family's dead relatives on All Souls' Day, November 2nd. So this business of trick-or-treating is also an old tradition and is based in this. This offering of soul cakes was encouraged by the church as a way to replace the Celtic practice of leaving food and wine on the doorstep for roaming spirits on Samhain. And if you read the stories associated with this, people locked their doors very securely on that night when these spirits were roaming about and offered this propitiatory wine and food on their doorstep. And if you did have to go out or went out to attend the Samhain bonfire or something, you dressed up in these costumes. Catholics and Anglicans celebrate All Saints' Day and All Souls' Day because they believe there is a prayerful spiritual communion. They believe there is a prayerful spiritual communion between those who have died in the state of grace and souls being purified in purgatory. So notice this unifying aspect of this. It's not just some ritual they're going through. They really believed that there was a connection between them and the ones who had gone on before, that had died in the state of grace, which means they were blessed by communion with the divine, or those souls being purified in purgatory so that they could then ascend into the higher realms. This is the Catholic, there are traces of it in many other traditions, Zoroastrianism and the Egyptian mythologies. Souling may have originated in Ireland and Britain, although similar practices for the souls of the dead are found as far south as Italy. As a matter of fact, in Sicily, it's still, according to the stories, it's still prevalent. Now, we're all familiar these days with jack-o'-lanterns, these pumpkins that are carved, sometimes very, very skillfully and elaborately. I used to know a man named David Goodnick who made a real art form. He used wood carving tools, and they were just works of art, the jack-o'-lanterns that he would carve. He and I worked together, and he would bring them to the office. It was really quite something. But, you know, there's the simple ones where it just has the jaggedy teeth and the triangular eyes and triangular nose, but with a candle inside. Here's why. The carving of jack-o'-lanterns springs from the souling custom of carving turnips into lanterns as a way of remembering the souls held in purgatory. So it was actually a lantern being carried. The candle inside was actually to light the way for these kids, these young people, going door to door, the poor, seeking soul cakes. The turnip was traditionally used in Ireland and Scotland at Halloween, but immigrants to North America soon used the native pumpkin, which is both readily available and much larger and easier to carve than turnips. And furthermore, it has nourishing seeds inside, and you can eat it after you're finished with it, because it's a nutritious gourd, as we know from our pumpkin pies. Now, moving away from Northern Europe, there are many other festivals of the dead. Many cultures hold a festival of the dead lasting up to 3 days at the end of October and the beginning of November in honor or recognition of deceased members of the community. I was blessed to visit Bolivia and Peru in the 1980s, the late 1980s. And so I saw some of this firsthand. This is from the Andes, which in there is called Coyasuyu. Coyasuyu, C-O-L-L-A, the double L's are pronounced as a Y, Coyasuyu. That's their name for the Andean region. In Inca religion, the entire month of November is Ayamarca, which translates as Festival of the Dead. So the whole month of November, we'll see why in a few moments. Ayamarca, which translates as Festival of the Dead. The Incas practiced mummification. During Ayamarca, the mummies of dead kings were brought to the main square of their capital, Cusco, is now in Peru. The main square of their capital, Cusco, and other cities. People sang and danced around those mummies, and they were dressed in valuable clothes and offered food. So this is, I actually witnessed this when I was there in late October, early November of 1988. It's a very sincere festival. They are very much venerating their past. And some of you may know, Bolivia is the first country in the Western Hemisphere to return to the political dominion, the administrative and political dominion of the Native American peoples. The Native American people now are in charge of Bolivia. So I'm sure that their festivals are practiced even more widely now. Jumping from the Andes to Japan, Japan has something called the Festival of the Lanterns. And there's a reason for this jump back in this direction. We'll talk about Mexico's Dia de los Muertos. Again, we'll jump back into the Western Hemisphere. But there's a reason for talking about Japan's Festival of the Lanterns just now. Obon, that's the name of this celebration, Obon is a shortened form of Ulambana. Ulambana is a transliteration of the Sanskrit word hanging upside down and implies great austerity or suffering. Now, this festival is a Shinto festival, and Shinto is associated, as we know, with the samurai, the warrior culture, and these great austerities that the samurai were capable of. So, Ulambana means hanging upside down and implies great austerity or suffering. It's mentioned also in the Puranas, people hanging upside down as a form of austerity. In this context, it means deliverance from that suffering and specifically refers to the salvation of anguished souls in hell. The Japanese hold an Obon festival, which lasts for 3 days, and to honor the spirits of their ancestors. It has now become a Buddhist Confucian custom, but it's definitely rooted in Shinto. So this now Buddhist Confucian custom is a family reunion holiday. You can see how the Buddhists and the Confucians made it more inclusive by putting the family at the center. So now it's a family reunion holiday, very like our Thanksgiving. People return to ancestral family places and visit and clean their ancestors' graves, Spirits of their ancestors are supposed to revisit the household altars. It has been celebrated in Japan for at least 500 years and traditionally includes a dance known as Bon Odori. As we know, the dance is very much a part of many, many festivals, ritualistic dance, I mentioned Ayamarca in the Andes. Dancing was also done, as it was said, around these mummies and around other sacred places. Other examples of these festivals are found among the indigenous peoples of Central America, Mexico, India, the Pacific Islands, Australia. This is how widespread it is. Listen to this list now. The indigenous peoples of Central America and Mexico, India, the Pacific Islands, Australia, ancient Persia, Egypt, the Roman Empire, and as we mentioned earlier, the northern region of Europe. But we'll focus just for a moment now, going back to the Western Hemisphere, we'll focus on Dia de los Muertos, Day of the Dead. Dia de los Muertos, or Day of the Dead, is celebrated each year in Mexico. Spanish conquistadores arrived in the New World to find indigenous people practicing a ritual many thousands of years old by that time that seemed to the Spanish initially, to the friars, it seemed to them that it mocked death. However, the Maya, Aztecs, and other ethnic groups of that region saw death as the extension of life, as a passage to the next world. And thus, it was in fact not a mockery, but a celebration. Festivities were held to honor the departed, not to belittle them. For us, it may seem strange that death and festivities can go hand in hand. Not to the Irish, as you may recall. The wake is very much a part of the Irish culture. But for most of us in today's culture, we think of death and festivities as a strange combination. Yet for most Mexicans, the two are intricately intertwined. The ancient indigenous peoples of Mexico believe that the souls of the dead actually return each year, as was you found in the Obon festival. They actually return each year to visit with their living relatives, to eat, drink, and be merry. And these Dia de los Muertos festivities, they go on all night. They used to go on more than one day, but now they just go on for the one. And they are very cheerful. They're not solemn, and they're having a good time. So they eat, drink, and be merry, just as they did when they were living. The Spaniards were unable to eradicate these practices, so they tied the native rituals to the Catholic Festival of the Dead, All Hallows' Eve, All Saints' Day, and All Souls' Day. As I said, the Dia de los Muertos used to go on longer, those 3 days. Preparations for Dia de los Muertos are going on right now in Mexico, and everywhere else there is a population descended from pre-Columbian Mexico. That, of course, includes Southern California very dramatically. There, you can go to the neighborhoods called barrios in Southern California and see these elaborate decorations in the front yard. I mean, puts Halloween decorations to shame. And this is all done. And they make altars in their front yards, and put pictures of their dead relatives there. This is all before they go to the cemetery on the night of. And it's celebrated in two parts: first for the children, and then for the adults. Deceased children, called little angels, are remembered on November 1st, All Saints' Day. Toys and colorful balloons adorn their graves, and the children play around the graves and play with their dead sisters and brothers and cousins. The next day, All Souls Day, adults who have died are honored with displays of the departed. Let me read that again. The next day, All Souls Day, adults who have died are honored with displays of that departed person's favorite food and drinks. And they go to some difficulty. I mean, if the particular dead relative particularly loved pozole, there will be a really magnificent pozole, much more elaborate and more savory and good than it would be ordinarily prepared. So they fix their favorite food and drinks, as well as decorate their graves with ornaments and personal belongings. Flowers, particularly a special type of marigold, which is sacred to the Nahua goddess of the cosmos, Tonantzin. We'll hear a little bit more about Tonantzin in a minute. It's very, very much a part of modern, that is, since the Spanish arrived, Mexico. So flowers, particularly a special type of marigold, which is sacred to the Nahua goddess of the cosmos, Tonantzin. Tonan means the cosmos. Tonal, actually, the word is tonal, means cosmos. Tzin is a form of their word goddess. So these flowers, which are sacred to Tonantzin, are placed on the graves along with candles. These guide the scent of the marigolds. They're very pungent. They have a very strong scent. The scent of these flowers and the candles guide the spirits home to their loved ones. At 6 p.m., the bells begin to ring every 30 seconds, summoning the dead. They ring throughout the night. At sunrise, the ringing stops, and those relatives who have kept the night-long vigil go home. If you ever have the opportunity to visit one of these graveyards that is near one of these Catholic churches in a neighborhood where these people live, it's really quite moving. You might want to do that sometime. I mentioned earlier that there were astronomical associations with this Day of the Dead. The celebration of the Virgin of Guadalupe in Mexico. Guadalupe is not Mary. She is Mary, but the legend goes that Mary and Tonantzin. Mary is known as Queen of the Angels, the mother of the cosmos in the Catholic idea. Mary and Tonantzin merged. And when they did, there was this burst of roses. They spontaneously appeared. And some of them were captured in the cloak of a man who witnessed this. He was in prayer at a very sacred place, already a sacred place, sacred to Tonantzin in Mexico, and his cloak was filled with these roses, but they were scattered everywhere, according to the story. So the celebration of the Virgin of Guadalupe in Mexico can be traced to a pre-conquest festival, honoring Tonantzin at the winter solstice, December 12th in the Julian calendar. So, too, we see the origins of the Catholic Church's Day of the Dead in the Nahua ritual known as the Binding of the Years. The date in their calendar corresponds to November 1st in the Gregorian calendar. And this Binding of the Years, really they know the name, they know the meaning of but they don't know what it actually meant, what binding of the years meant. Perhaps some of you can shed some thought on that when we go into the discussion period. less than a quarter, now this is the Astronomical Association, less than a quarter hour after midnight, the midnight of October 31st, November 1st, the star formation we call the Pleiades passes through the zenith above Tula and Tenochtitlan, two principal cities of the Maya and the Inca. And therein we find the link among all these widespread observances that honor the dead, the Pleiades. Just a few words about the Pleiades. The Pleiades, as some of you know, perhaps all of you know, are a formation, very beautiful formation, of seven stars. There are actually six at one distance and one that is closer. But they appear to be seven stars in a grouping. They're one of the most evident to the naked eye of the star formations, the groupings of stars. In many cultures, the Egyptians and in India, the Andes, and among the Maya and Aztec of Mexico, and among the Hopi and Navajo, at least here in the southwestern United States, it was believed that the beings who transformed humanity from the rough hominids of pre-human existence into human beings. Now, some of you may have seen the film 2001, A Space Odyssey. This is directed by Stanley Kubrick and written by Arthur C. Clarke, a great writer, not just of science fiction, but also a scientist. Arthur C. Clarke believed in this myth, and it's very strong among the Australian Aborigines, for example, that people from the Pleiades came and transformed human beings from ape-like creatures into the human beings we see now. So this is that association with the Pleiades. Whether it continues to exist in all of these mythologies as visitors from that star formation, there is that in these ancient myths and stories. The Spanish conquerors of Mexico also found there a tradition that the world was once destroyed and reborn when the Pleiades were overhead at midnight, the identical tradition that we find in the Far East, a myth so universal as to suggest a foundation of fact. So though this visitation by extraterrestrials is not, at least in the mythology that we can find, so universal, this business of something very important happening that's interpreted as the world being destroyed and reborn when the Pleiades were overhead at midnight, this identical tradition we find in the Far East and elsewhere, particularly, as I said, among the Australian Aborigines and the Pacific Islanders, a myth so universal as to suggest a foundation of fact of some kind. So is it a coincidence that the goddess we most associate with the destruction and dissolution of the world, Ma Kali, is also worshipped at the time of year when the Pleiades are prominent in the night sky? Fall festivals in Mexico correspond with Jantar Puja. Pardon me if I mispronounced that. Fall festivals in Mexico correspond with Jantar Puja, a celebration of the first fruits of winter rice held in November by the Bengali Santals. What is this first fruits? It is rebirth. It is sustenance and nourishment of a time when there wasn't enough, and now there's enough. The Santals also call one of their sub-tribes by their name for the Pleiades, Saren. Hindus in the western part of India, who trace their descent from the mother goddess Amba, am I pronouncing that correct? Amba, not Amba, Amba. Hindus in the western part of India, who trace their descent from the mother goddess Amba, which is the chief star of the sacred Pleiades, begin their year with the month Kartik, October, November. The great Hindu star festival Diwali, or Dipwali, meaning a row of lamps, is held in the same month. Streets and houses are illuminated to signify the triumph of good over evil, regeneration. Lamps are kept on all night, and firecrackers are set off to drive away evil spirits. The same thought as a bonfire, a great crackling fire, firecrackers. The Santal name for the Pleiades, Saren, is connected with the Vedic Saranyu, the mother of the twins day and night, who still retains, and she still retains her place in Indian mythology as the god Hari. She was also called Amba, the mother, the first star in the Pleiades, who led her sons, the farmers and mariners of southern India, to Persia, Egypt, Syria, Asia Minor, and Greece. This is the mythology. And the anthropologists are working on this, and the more they find out, the more it looks like it's actually. Certainly the language pattern proves this is true. This dispersion of the Sanskritic tongue and its changes into different forms. So the position of the Pleiades, and not the sun, seems to have governed some of the most significant rituals and celebration of the primeval year. The Pleiades, not the position of the sun. It's interesting. Annual festivals for the dead were celebrated at the time when the Pleiades were first visible on the horizon at evening, and then later on, as they began at that time, and then when the Pleiades were in the ascendant, just directly overhead, that's when certain, this is what I witnessed in South America. I was up on a hillside at a sacred place, looking down into a broad plain, and there was a procession of torches. It was pitch black. There was a procession of torches in a very complicated pattern that was being done, and it was all about rebirth. It was all about regeneration and rebirth. It was awesome. In the most ancient calendar of India, The month which began their year was Kartik, or October-November. Memorial services for the dead at this time of the year, when the Pleiades occupy a conspicuous position in the heaven, seems to be a feature in the history of almost every culture on earth, from remote antiquity to the present day. The universality of social and spiritual customs linked to this distant group of seven stars may well be considered as one of the most remarkable facts that that astronomical history records. And by the way, just as a matter of curiosity, I thought, well, if they're very far away, how far? 434 to 446 light years, these stars in this group, that's how far away they are. So that's a considerable distance. But it's not, in astronomical terms, it's really not that far. I mean, we record events that take place billions of light years away, millions of light years away. So something just 434 to 446 light years from Earth, well, if you were a fan of Star Trek The Next Generation, with your warp drive, you'd be there in no time. So, but it is interesting that this very prominent grouping of seven stars has such a tie to these things. The goddess Kali, who was at the center of Sri Ramakrishna's divine play, has ancient links to the Pleiades. Kali Puja will be elaborately celebrated on November 6th in the temple in our Hollywood Center and at other Vedanta centers in the West. It would be celebrated earlier, except they want to celebrate it on the weekends so that it can be, so more people can attend. It's the actual date is earlier. Mother Kali's daughter festival, our Halloween, with its traditional ties to the Pleiades through its connection to Samhain, will be observed this coming Wednesday night. So I hope that puts a different complexion on Halloween for you, a deeper, more spiritual meaning to what has become, like all sacred holidays, it has become trivialized. So, Jai Ma, and happy Halloween. So, there's so much more to say about this. You know, we could do a weekend's retreat on all of this, and if you'd like, we could. But now, what has this given rise to among you? What did you think? What have you to say? This is the best part. Yes, dear.
I just have a question. You mentioned 3 days as
yes.
being a common length of time for mm-hmm. some of these places. Is there a significance to three?
Well, always. The three is the deeply sacred number. It's the base number. One is the beginning of manifestation. Two is the gross manifestation. So there's the subtle, the gross, and then there, you know, the first gross manifestation is what physicists refer to as plasma. It's not a thing, it's an energy. But then it condenses and becomes, and we find it everywhere. It's in Genesis, and on the third day, and that's when creation actually begins. In its forming. So the three is deep. I'm sure you know more about this, Dr. Mudge. Please tell us more about three.
This one was reflected upon by a German author, number three. He says it's kind of interesting. All over the world, three is a special number to all of us. Time-wise, hour, minute, second.
Mm-hmm.
Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh. And he gave so many examples, you know, even mother, three Devi,
mm-hmm.
Lakshmi, mm-hmm. Saraswati, and Parvati.
Mm-hmm.
You see? So for some reason, three has been very
auspicious.
Yes, and three times three becomes nine, which is the, again, it's the completion of the cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we begin a new cycle after nine. We're back to one. So just exactly what all of the significances of three are, those are the ones that come immediately to my mind and to Dr. Mudge's.
Trinity.
Anybody else?
Trinity.
Well, the Trinity, of course, in Christian, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. The Holy Ghost, by the way, it's not much understood. The Holy Ghost is feminine. It is Sophia. It is yeah, Shekinah in Hebrew. It is the feminine, but the Catholic Church, of course, being determinedly patriarchal out of the Roman Empire, suppressed that aspect of it. But what are the words that start the name of virtually every cathedral in Europe? Our Lady of so and so. So the various aspects of the goddess are represented by these various cathedrals and various aspects of the Divine Mother, who is worshipped as Mary. It used to be a mortal sin, that is to say, one for which there was no remission of the sin, if you worshipped Mary at the center of your spiritual practice. But then it was discovered that John Paul II, who grew up with the Black Madonna of Poland, was a Marianist. And so, typically of the Catholic Church, when faced with this kind of dilemma, they simply said it's no longer a heresy, it's no longer a mortal sin. So they also did away with, limbo, where the souls of children who had not been given into grace. They resided there for eternity. What a comical idea. The children would be imprisoned in this. And John Paul II didn't buy it for a minute, and so the Catholic Church also did away with that. Anyone else? Yes?
Three is known throughout the world as being the first mystical numbers. And in ritualistic application, many cultures use the number three as an application to certain things. In the mathematical field, it's the first binomial. Three is known in many different ways. Very powerful number.
If you look at the Om symbol, that's also three.
Yes, isn't it? I hadn't thought about that in that context. Yes, it is. And you know, the triangle is the basis. When you're doing puja, you draw triangles, and there's reason. And then the mandala for mother has it's a intricate many triangles in a very complicated and precise pattern, and you find it in the mandalas done by the Navajo.
There's also Triguna Sattva-Rajasi.
Yeah, there you are. Thank you. Yes, Dr. Munch.
You know, like you said, this can easily take a weekend retreat.
Yes.
Because this is all based on superstition from my standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And superstition is always more attractive than the facts. Because we respect superstition. If you take that away, our life will be very dry. But let me draw some parallels between Indian tradition and Halloween.
Uh-huh.
Exactly the same thing, amazingly, is done in India. It is done on the night previous to Diwali, which is called Chaturdashi, the 14th, Kali Chaturdashi. So that is the night on which the people cut the pumpkin,
mm-hmm.
they draw this circle of water on the road,
mm-hmm.
put the pumpkin in the center, and they say, if you ever step inside that circle, then you will be doomed. And people will make sure that children do not do that. And the children, when nobody is watching, they will put this in the circle.
Of course they will.
This has been, and nothing has happened to anyone. But interestingly, on that night, Kali Chaturdashi night, many people, they spend the entire night in the cemetery.
Uh-huh.
Which is,
I didn't find this in my research.
They spend in the cemetery, and basically they want to induce the black magic.
Do you mean the cemetery or the cremation grounds?
Cremation grounds. We do not have cemetery.
Well, when we think cemetery, we don't think
cremation.
So thank you.
Cremation grounds. Yes. And the cremation ground is always located far away from the city.
Right.
They will never be in the midst of that one.
Except Benares.
Yes, except Benares. So they will go down there and spend the whole night there, basically to learn the black magic.
Black tantra.
Yes, and that black magic is controlled by a special divine spirit called Kal Bhairav. So he's
Which
like...
means what?
He's like a first assistant to Mother Chandi.
Mm.
So he can also give some very fierce things. You know, they learn it, and once you learn it, then people are afraid of them. Nothing is tested. That's why I say superstition rules very powerfully. But they say he has spent the whole night in the cemetery, acquired the black magic, and therefore don't hurt him.
Don't cross
don't
him.
Don't cross his path.
Yeah, don't mm-hmm. cross him, yeah. So he may not know squat, but
exactly.
but he has that reputation.
Yes. Now, the bird which is classically associated with the deer is the crow.
Ah.
You know, that's the reason why we feed the crows, you know, when we want to feed the ancestors, which exactly parallels with the English system, which I read today in the Washington Post, that on the top of London Tower, there is a man, for the generation, for the last 400 years, they take care of ravens.
Mm-hmm.
These ravens are specially, they are like pet.
Mm-hmm.
And they are described as kind and cruel.
Yes.
But they are very cute, and somebody is taking care, because 400 years ago, the king was told that if there are no ravens on the tower will collapse and the kingdom will go away.
Mm-hmm.
So he gave the message that take care of the ravens, and for 400 years until now today, somebody is taking care of them.
Yes, my late wife was very fond of ravens, and she made a point of meeting these people when we went to the Tower of London.
These ravens are also so cute, because they love biscuits and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But nowadays, the people use garlic-flavored that they do not like. They pick it in their beak, go to the water next door, and keep on dipping until the salt or the garlic is dissolved, and then they eat it.
Well, the ravens are very smart. Ravens are very... When Swami Atmarupananda is here, someone asked him how two crows saved his life in the Grand Canyon. Please do ask him that. How is it that two crows saved your life in the Grand Canyon? This is not superstition. This is a true story. It's a very moving story.
I wanted to add about ancestor worship.
Yes.
And as far as I know, in India we have separate month to pay homage to your forefathers,
mm-hmm.
your ancestors. And a whole week or 2 weeks,
no, 1 month.
1 month is specifically assigned to do these rituals.
Wonderful.
And they are still, I'm sure, it's still prevalent.
Well, they're you know, Swami Vivekananda in Jnana Yoga, at the beginning of Jnana Yoga, Swami Vivekananda traces the relevance and the necessity for the human psyche of these particular kinds of rituals. We outgrow it, so to speak, he says, but nevertheless, it is very much built into us. And if you sit around in a bar, this again is personal experience, if you sit around in a bar with a bunch of guys who are getting a little drunk, what they'll do is they'll talk about their daddies and their granddaddies. I guarantee it. That's what they'll do. After they've had a few drinks, they'll start talking about their daddies and their granddaddies. And it's really quite a remarkable thing to witness, because, you know, it gets a little into one-upsmanship. My daddy was better than your daddy, and my granddaddy, you know, came from further away than your daddy or granddaddy, or came earlier or something. But that's what they talk about. It's just when that
Brother Shankar, what were you doing at the bar, by the way?
Well, I was 19 years old, and okay. I was experimenting.
Excuse.
The name of the bar in question was the Irisher in Seal Beach, California, and I at the time was managing a little bookstore just a couple of doors down from the Irisher, and I was fascinated.
One more thing about that particular month is called Shraddha, not Shraddha, but the opposite, Shraddha.
Which means
that you offer your homage, your food and drinks, and particularly those that the dead person like.
Yes, just as in Dia de los Muertos, yes. And this happens when?
There's a month of Bhadrapada, which is in the monsoon.
Monsoon. Which would be corresponding to which months in our calendar?
It will be approximately the same thing.
The last day is the new moon of before the Navratri.
Yes.
So it is in the mother season.
Yes.
So the whole month goes whichever time you like. My father, which date he expired, we do that day.
Yeah.
And the last day is for all ancestors.
Yeah. All souls day.
Yes. Or Pitra Visarjan.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you feel people. You feel everyone.
Yes. Well,
family, you know.
If you go to a Dia de los Muertos celebration in any place where these people celebrate it, go hungry. Because they will, like I mentioned, this spectacular pozole. This is not something as was imagined.
But at the same time, you don't have any happy celebration during that month. For example, you cannot decide to marry during that month.
Ah.
Shraddha. So it's forbidden.
Well, it's interesting. Because that's a little opposite to the way that the Native Americans of Mexico and those areas and South America. Though I don't know, I never explored, never thought to explore what the prohibitions were. I saw the positive aspects, but not these kind of things. Anything else?
It's very interesting that the Mexicans celebrate the death. So there are Vedantics. Really, they understood the Vedanta.
Well, if you look at the spiritual traditions of the Andes and of Mexico, there are many correspondences.
Yes.
Many correspondences. As one of their great teachers of the modern era, Don Juan Matus, said, their priests went off the rails. They began to get into this dark power that Dr. Mudge mentioned. And so we begin to see human sacrifice and blood sacrifice, and they went off the rails. And it's not the first time in human history it's happened. I believe it's happened in India as well. So,
if you look at frankly, isn't it true that the grotesque and the good, that both mixed in our Vedantic view.
And in our psyches.
In our
yes.
psyches.
Exactly. And in our psyches. You're absolutely right. I mean, the terrible form of mother, Bagala, or Chandi,
yeah.
or what is her name? The one who killed...
Kali.
There's that aspect of Kali, but there's... anyway.
Mahishasuri? No,
it's one of the ones mentioned
Chandi.
In... Whoever it was that killed Munda, but I don't remember now her name. It's mentioned in the Chandi hymns. Yes, these aspects, as it says so clearly in the very beginning of the Devi Mahatmyam, that Mother is the great Devi as also the great Asuri. So we can't pull it apart, you know. It's not a butterfly. You can't take the wings and tack them here and there, and the thorax here, and say, oh, that's the way it is. No, it doesn't come apart that way. Anyone else? Well, splendid.
There was an interesting and instructive anecdote which came for the Halloween, that this group of girls, they were collecting treats.
Mm-hmm.
And then they say, now it's getting dark, so let's go home. And one of them says, I want to collect some more chocolate, so you go, and I'll follow later. Later on, there were two paths to reach home. The shortest one went through the cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so she says, I'm scared, but then it's so short that I'll be easily at home. So let me take a chance and go through the cemetery. And right in the middle of that, she heard some pounding. She says, my God. And then she saw that there was an old man working on the graveyard stone.
Mm-hmm.
She said, my gosh, you scared me to death. What are you doing here? He says, my name has been misspelled on that one.
what a good Halloween joke. I'll have to remember that one for next year. Thank you, Dr. Munch. My name is misspelled on that one. Well, very good. All right. Well, we'll close with our wonderful closing chant, our prayer for peace. Let there be peace in outer space.
Let there be peace in outer space.
Let there be peace in the sky, on the earth, and in the waters.
Let there be peace in the sky,
in the
earth, and in the
waters. Let there be peace in the herbs, the plants, and the trees.
Let there be peace in the earth, the plants, and the trees.
May the gods be peaceful.
May the whole
universe
be pervaded by peace.
Let that infinite universal peace prevail throughout my being. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om peace, peace, peace be unto us and to all beings everywhere.
Particularly to the ghosts and goblins.
Yes, please. Peace to the ghosts and the goblins. All creatures everywhere. So there's treats on the table and coffee to be had and tea and so on. So please come inside. Thank you.
Some soul cake.